Hey, it's Lois. Welcome back to the She Loves podcast. For the final episode of season two, I had the pleasure of sitting down with Emily Bellet, founder and CEO of VestPod, a digital platform that financially empowers women, and author of You're Not Broke, You're Pre-Rich. We dig deep into the differences between how men and women deal with money, getting started with investing, pensions, and savings. It's a very important one this week with so much incredible information, but just a little disclaimer before we start, this is not financial advice.
Hello, Emily. Thank you so much for joining us today. We're so excited to have you here on the She Loves podcast.
Hi, Lois. Thank you for having me.
How are you? How is everything at this time? How have you?
It's been crazy. I mean, on the personal side, I actually had my third baby in February before lockdown. So for us, it's been really weird. We managed lockdown with three young kids, no schools. Then we managed to see our family in France for a little while, and then we had to rush to go back for school. And we're home. The little one is here working from home. So it's fine. It's just readjusting, changing also the way VestPod works. For me, going online is actually a big opportunity because you can reach more women. So we've been doing a lot more of our online stuff and we can talk about that. But yeah, I think it's a journey. So it's been a long year. I don't know what's going to happen now, but we just hope we can see our families for Christmas, I guess.
Yeah.
What about you? How was your lockdown on 2020?
Well, it started well, but me and the girls, Jenny and Rachel, we lost our jobs in the summer. So
no.
I just, yeah, but you know, I think everything happens for a reason, and
of course,
it worked out well. So I've moved back to Manchester, which is why I've got this light on above me right now, because it's dark here. There's like no sunlight. I forgot how much it rains, honestly. In the north, but yeah, I think it's looking up. There was a bit of a bleak part there for us, but I think it's looking up, and we're working on this season two now, so it gives us something to aim for.
That's fun. Yeah,
so I wanted to get started with a bit about you, because I know that you have your podcast, you have VestPod, you are an author, and that's just so incredible. How did it all start for you? How did you believe that this was the thing that was going to be your life's calling? Why is it so important?
Yeah, so I started actually working in finance in 2006, 2007. And I worked for a big bank called Lehman Brothers. You've heard about it. It went bust a year after I was there. So, I studied economics, finance, management, and I decided, maybe a career in banking. My friends were like, yeah, it's super cool. You're going to be living in London. I was living in Paris at the time, so I moved to London. And then the bank went bankrupt. I was lucky to keep my job, and I worked in private equity, so in finance, just investing in big companies for another like 6-7 years. But then I thought, what's my mission in life? Do I really want to be a partner in private equity? Maybe there's something bigger. I mean, it was really interesting and very challenging, so I learned a lot. But actually, I thought, okay, let's do something else. It's quite hard to actually transition from this type of jobs, from the outside world. You wouldn't think, yeah, you can do everything. But actually, when you're in finance and spending your days and night in front of your computer doing like financial modeling and presentations, it's really hard to understand what you're capable of. Yeah. So I left to actually set up a first business, a tech startup. We raised some funding for this. And the business didn't work, so we had to close it after 2 years. So it was from, being a top banker to actually having a startup that didn't work. So back home and trying to think, okay, what's the next step? And then, I started thinking about my own money also, because coming from, more like a finance salary and being, quite privileged, being able to work in this industry, to then being a startup owner and paying myself almost nothing, and then having no income, I realized, okay, maybe I should have prepared a bit earlier about these transitions and, what's going to happen. And then I got pregnant with my first kid, and I realized, I'm not going to be able to go back to the industry. I don't want to, but also it's not going to be possible. So how do I make money? What do I do with my life? And I started thinking about our journey as women, and the way we manage money is completely different from men, I think, because we tend to be the primary carer. There's still a gender pay gap, so we earn less than men. So we're not in a really good position, and nothing is done to really like elevate women and help women thrive financially. Also, we don't talk about money. I mean, I don't know about you, but I've always been told, talking about money is really awkward. It's impolite. You shouldn't do it. And it's really awkward, to be honest, to have this money conversation, because it's been a taboo for too long. So where do you actually start? So I was at home and I was like, okay, I need to start something around money. I looked at the, you know, pension statistics, and women retire extremely poor on maybe 20% pension savings of men. So that's nothing due to the gender pay gap of us, you know, maybe having kids, or even if you don't have kids, you tend to, you know, women tend to be the primary carers also for their families, maybe elderly parents and stuff.
Yeah.
So we take some time off, or maybe, you know, a few hours here and there, and then we start working part-time. I had three kids and I wanted to take some time off. So, I mean, you don't get, especially as a freelancer, you don't get any help during this month. So that's money you don't save, and that's money you don't save for your future also. So that has an impact on pension, and there's also the part about investing, but we'll talk about that later. So looking at the statistics, I was like, my God, like, I worked in finance. I didn't know that. I didn't have a pension for years. What about my girlfriends who actually don't work in finance? And, you know, most of them don't. So I studied Vestpod as a way for women to think about money, include money in their life, but in something that's, you know, quite positive. It's, for me, it's okay to talk about money. It's okay to negotiate. It's okay to ask for more. It's okay also to think about money just as a tool, and it's definitely not associated to, you know, your self-worth. But that's really difficult to understand in practice, I think, because money is driving so many of, you know, our decisions on a daily basis. So Vestpod is really here. I mean, it's a community, events, workshops, to teach you everything you've never learned about money. Yeah. And also open the conversation about money. So like this conversation we're having today, but having on a small scale with your friends, with, you know, maybe a new community, people you don't really know, because at which point in your life are you going to tackle this subject if no one helps you to actually get started? So from, I mean, you asked about the book. So from Vestpod, I never thought I would be writing a book. I mean, I love books, as you can see, but, you know, from becoming an author, you have this massive imposter syndrome. And I was like, wow, I'm never going to be able to actually write a book. And then a publisher, Romilly, she was on my newsletter list for Vestpod. And we sent a newsletter called You're Not Broke, You're Pre-Rich. That was the title of the newsletter. That's now the title of my book. And she was like, I love it. We need a book for women, something empowering, positive, full of tips and guidance. So, you know, I had to learn a lot while building Vestpod about managing my own personal finances, the industry, the regulation. It can be quite tricky, like pensions and stuff. And I then put everything in my book. It's a very practical handbook for managing your finances. So it's been fun. So many women have read it. I think it was helpful. I think it's helpful. So yeah, it's a journey.
Yeah, it's a lot. You've achieved so much. I just wanted to go back to when you said about the difference in women and men. Why do you think it is that we have such different... I know it's very stereotypical, and I actually, myself, I have no idea what I'm doing when it comes to money. So this is helpful for me. But I have one friend and she knows exactly what she's doing. She's like, no, you need to get this savings account. You need to get this bond. You need to do this investment and things like this. So she's an anomaly, whereas I've got male friends who all knew this. They all read the books, they know everything that they're doing, and their investments are earning whilst I'm figuring it out. How come then it is that we're so different in terms of gender?
Yeah, so I think there's a, I mean, you're right, and you're talking about yourself, but, you know, most women I talk to, we really don't know where to start, because money is such a big topic. And, you know, you talk about your friends, like your male friends investing their money. That's something I experienced while working in finance. So I wasn't investing my own money, even if my job was to investing, you know, big money, like hundreds of millions for other people, yeah, and returning money for them. But I didn't have time to look into investing. I, you know, first of all, you have to go through the barriers of, you know, where do I start on the internet? Do I need a pension? Do I need an ISA, an investment account? So these are complicated terms, but we'll talk later in the podcast about how to actually get started. But I think men tend to just try it. So, you know, they were trying to do a few investments, not necessarily very successful. They lost money, but at least they learned. And until you actually get started investing your money, I think you can learn, you can do workshops, online videos and stuff, but you need to understand this feeling of having money invested in the stock market. Yeah. And I think for women, we tend to be really diligent. So for us, it's a matter of understanding the process. And what is the process when it comes to money management? Our goal, I mean, what we want to achieve in life, we have like big goals, big financial goals, and they all have a price tag. So we need to organize our money and make sure we have enough money to achieve these goals. Often, I mean, our dream lifestyle can be quite expensive. If you want to buy a house, if you want to retire with enough money, you want to pay for kids' education, universities, whatever. So it's a matter of prioritizing and understanding, okay, where do I want to save money now? But it's also managing to save for your short-term goals. So maybe at the moment you're saving for your, you know, hopefully a holiday when we can travel again. But it's also not compromising on your long-term goal. And I know when you're in your 20s, it's your first job. The last thing you want to think about is retirement because you're like, you think it's too far down the line. If you work for someone, they take, you know, there's you have to contribute into your pension fund. So you do a salary sacrifice. So part of your salary will go directly in the pension fund. You're not going to see this money for 40 years. You think, you know, it's not for me. I opt out. I think that's a big mistake that we make very early on is not thinking about the long term. Because actually, when you start investing money, it's for the long term. And that will help your money grow much faster than if you were just saving money. Mm-hmm. But now, I mean, if we take a step back, is okay, from the income you receive today, sometimes it can be really hard to even save money. And how do you actually save? And saving is by, you know, starting with making a budget, understanding your number, understanding where your money is going. This can you can think it's not very sexy, that it's really boring. Yeah. Maybe you're scared of numbers. Also, a lot of people fear numbers from, you know, their math classes when they were young or like terrible math teachers. Yeah. But I think it's so important to also face your numbers. So understanding, okay, where do I stand? How am I spending my money? So looking at your bank accounts, actually opening these bank statements, looking at your bank account, maybe on a daily or weekly basis, because if you never look at it, I mean, it just comes as a surprise, and then you can end up in, you know, credit card debt and overdraft, and this can be quite expensive. So I think it's a matter of, you know, breaking down the cycle and understanding, okay, you know, where do I stand today? What can I do for my own finances? And then you can think about investing for the long term. So I think when we're very new to the world of money and finance, we're like, oh, you know, I need to invest. I need to make my money grow and stuff. But make sure first that, you know, you've repaid your expensive debt. Make sure you have a budget in place. You know where your money is going. And you have a plan. You know what you're saving for. What will you need money for over the next 5 years, 10 years, and 20 years? And I think that's, you know, once you have this in place, and you don't necessarily need a financial advisor to do that, you should just do it for yourself first when you're in your 20s. And then when you start earning more money and stuff, you can definitely go see an advisor. But being in control of your own money, I think it's really amazing, and it will really help you. And also one issue we may have is around money beliefs. And I talked about how we view money, but I think a lot of us think, you know, I'm bad with money. I can't save money. I can't invest money. I don't know how to do it. That's going to be the case for most people. So maybe thinking about rebuilding a healthier money mindset. So seeing money with just, you know, maybe different glasses and thinking, yeah, actually, you know, money is quite interesting. It's an interesting tool. And having a more positive view about money is really going to help you. I think management is going to be, you know, 80% mindset and then 20% like very technical. Yeah. So if you're more positive towards money, I'm not talking about manifesting money or anything like that, but, you know, just thinking that money is something that can really help you in your life, and that you have the ability to, you know, make money, you have the ability to keep your money, to save money and to make it grow, I think is really empowering, especially for women. And then one last thing on the comparison between men and women, there's an issue around maybe confidence, where women, especially around investing, I see women maybe a bit scared to get started investing because maybe they don't know how investing works. They think it's extremely risky. So I think there's a lot of education to be done around investing. I think investing for the long term is not risky. I mean, there's a risk of potentially losing some money, but you usually invest what you can afford to lose or live in the stock market for a very long time. And also there's a big risk of not investing for the long term. So if you keep money for too long on a saving account at the moment, that's giving you maybe 0.5%, you know, it's nothing. So for a year, for two, for five, it's okay because you need this pot of money, this emergency fund that will stay with you in case anything happens to you. But for your retirement, you're not going to leave your money on like, you know, crap interest rate for like 40 years because that's not going to help. The economy is growing. There's inflation. So prices of goods, services are going up. So you need your money to grow at least at the rate of inflation. And that's why we need to think, you know, a bit further down about, you know, saving maybe is not enough for the medium to long term, and think about investing. Mm-hmm. And lastly, around confidence, I think one issue is around financial services, banks, investment platforms. I mean, the financial industry is mostly made of men.
Yeah. It's definitely
white men in suits.
Yeah, it's a man's club, isn't it? Like, it's intimidating for women, I think.
Yeah, it is intimidating. I agree with you. And now I think there's a lot of initiatives to get more women working in finance, more women, you know, marketing financial products, actually making financial products that will work for women. But I think we need to, you know, open again the conversation. And because the industry is extremely regulated, it can be quite hard to navigate. I mean, even the terms like pensions, ISA, if you know, you've never saved enough money into this before, you're like, where do I even start? So there's a lot of work to be done for the industry, but I think my role is more, you know, empowering women really and giving them the tools and trying to break it down to tell them, you know, what's important, what's less important, and really getting started, because we always have a million excuses not to start something, not to start saving, not to start investing. We never have enough money, but it's not getting better. I think, you know, when you're late 20s, 30s, when you want to start maybe, you know, changing job or building a business or living to maybe take care of your children for a few years, I mean, it's going to be even harder. So I think, you know, acquiring this habit when you're quite young in your 20s, I think it's really good, even if you say £5 a month, £10 a month, whatever it is. But I think getting started.
So the reason that I've been looking into my money and things is because of 2020, because of everything that's happened this year. And I think, I don't know, personally, I think that this is probably the most important year for people to get their finances in order. Because I know when we lost our jobs in, I think, June, I was like, oh, I don't have enough savings now to stay living in London. I don't have enough, you know, because there's no guarantee that you're going to be able to walk straight into a job, especially in this recession, especially in this like high levels of unemployment. So how do you think that how has this recession and how has this pandemic affected people's finances? And what would you predict for the future?
I think the pandemic has accelerated change. So things that should have happened have happened much quicker. And I think in terms of the job market, you're right. And this is really tricky. So I hope it's going to pick up. I think now we're in a new world. So companies also needed to adapt. They had to completely change the way they work, the way they produce, the way they sell services, the way they communicate. So we're right in the middle of the transition. So how now do we think more personally about, you know, ourselves? And I think, I'm not saying that pandemic like that will happen every year, but I think there's going to be things happening. You know, there's things that happening in that happen in the economy. I mean, I worked for Lehman Brothers in 2008. That was the beginning of the financial crisis. Lots of people lost their job also, and it took quite, you know, it took a bit of time to actually recover and go back to normal. So these events will happen again and again. So I think it's very important for us to all think about money as something very, very personal. So there's whatever happens outside, happens to the stock market, and these are things we actually can't control. But what can you control for yourself? And I think that's really important that we all start with, first of all, looking at your own numbers, so understanding where is your money, how much money you have, how much saving, how much debt. And think about, okay, am I happy with this savings? You're going to work on it. That's going to improve. Do you have a lot of debt? Maybe that's the first thing you need to tackle, because you're right. What if you have a big credit card balance and you think, I'm going to repay it next month, but then maybe you're on furlough, maybe you'll lose your job. Then how are you going to repay this credit card? So maybe this is like really the first thing you can tackle. If you've lost your job, you don't have enough income at the moment to repay this type of debt, you should really phone your, you know, credit providers, your banks, and ask them potentially for a delay in repayments. But don't hide, like don't just, you know, leave these letters from the bank somewhere. You really need to address it, because these tend to snowball. So you start paying interest on interest on interest, mm-hmm. and it becomes very expensive, and you end up in a situation where it's very tricky. You don't know what to do. There's a lot of shame associated to debt. You don't want to talk to anyone about it. So that's a very tricky situation, because then as soon as you find a job, you have another income. That's the first thing you need to tackle, but you already quite in the red. There's lots of debt charities online also, Citizen Advice, Mind, and you should really call them up. It's anonymous, so if you have any issue, really important to do that. So first thing is understanding where you are, and the second thing is it's make your budget and start thinking about saving, because we all need to have like a little pot of saving somewhere. And even if you're young, because as you say, like if you can't, you know, you have to move away, for example, from London or for like, you know, your current lifestyle, if you can't afford it anymore, at least if you have a little cash buffer, and advisors will recommend that you have 3 to 6 months of living expenses. That's a lot of money. So
it's a lot. Yeah,
that's a lot. So even so, that's like the, you know, recommendation from financial advisors, but you need to start somewhere. And I feel, you know, when you read the statistics, a lot of people in the UK actually don't have any savings. So having even like a month or something that will help you. I mean, hopefully we don't see this situation again where, you know, you can't work for months, but at least if you have a few months of income and that you can cover any emergency, that's super useful. And as soon as, you know, you've taken the money out, you used it, the day you find a job, you start saving again and you rebuild this fund. And this fund should be there always for you forever, like your whole life. And maybe, you know, when you get older, maybe when you have a family, you have a bigger house, then you need more money into this fund. But we should all have these like little funds of money. And saving is going to be your, I think is going to be your first protection for, you know, whatever happens in these circumstances. So I know it's now late and it's really hard to give this tip for people who are, I mean, and if you are struggling now to, you know, pay your rent and stuff like that, of course, it's maybe not the best time to, you know, to start saving, but be really, really careful about how you spend money, do your budget, and look at, you know, what the government can offer you. So of course, there's the furlough scheme. I mean, things are changing very quickly. I know for self-employed, this is really tricky. There's been a few grants for business owners, but you may not be eligible. I know for Vespod, we couldn't get anything. So it's been really tricky. I think there's ways to generate extra income at the moment, sort of little side hustles if you're really struggling. I've been selling a lot of stuff on eBay, for example. That sounds quite stupid, but it works so well. And you can, you know, make a few hundred pounds a year, you know, a month. So that's quite useful. I would invite you to look at all your bills. So just check your bank statements, look at all your direct debits, and go and renegotiate all these bills. If you're really struggling, again, talk to your providers, try to switch to another provider. Same for your mobile phone, for your internet. So trying to get better deals on each of these, maybe, you know, you can release maybe £100 a month or something like that. So that, again, that makes quite a big difference. Mm. So really working on, you know, fine tuning your expenses and see where your money is going. And then maybe another extra income, such as, I don't know, maybe blogging. There's a few ways. I know it's tricky, but if you have a lot of time in your hands now, you feel you're not going to be able to find a job, is there something you can do from home that adds value and that can pay you a little bit while the market slowly recovers?
Yeah, because if you look after the pennies, the pounds will take care of themselves.
Love it.
My mom always tells me this.
It's true.
Okay, the other thing I wanted to talk about was millennials. You know, this kind of age group. This is the time when our parents definitely were buying houses. They were, you know, maybe on their second house. It kind of feels like owning a house at this time is a far off dream. What would you say to millennials who are, or anyone who's thinking that?
So I think owning a place, I mean, was everybody's dream maybe, you know, 30, 40 years ago. Is it today still the case for us? I think we are living a very different life. I mean, you moved to somewhere else. Yeah. We all think about moving all the time. So, you know, is buying a house actually the best investment? It's going to be the biggest investment if you make it, usually. So I think you have to take your time and really think about it. Buying a house is great if you buy a house at a price. The house prices go up, you manage to sell and you make some money. Also, if you live in the house, obviously you're not going to pay rent, you're going to pay your mortgage payment. So that's a completely different investment. But I think you really have to think about it. House prices at the moment tend to be quite high. They've been going up even more because of the stamp duty holiday. So people are sort of rushing to buy a property at the moment. But if you can't buy a property today, I don't think it's the end of the world. But I don't think it's, you know, if you can't buy today, you should say, okay, then, you know, I can't save, I can't do anything, I'm just going to spend my money and leave 100%. I think you can, but I think it's also important to save. So if you don't invest your money in a house, can you invest your money somewhere else? Maybe you can invest, you can look at your pension, maybe you can look at investing in the stock market. So there's other ways to make your money grow that can possibly be more efficient than buying a place. I think we have to be very real about buying a place. I think it seems like a dream to become a homeowner, but there's lots of costs also associated with having your own place. And I think you have to take that into account. And of course, we would love, you know, all love to have a place, pay like a very low mortgage and not spend any more money on rent. But I think in practice, this can be a bit different. So buying a home, yes, it may be a dream and it may be your goal. And if it is, then you should really save for it and use maybe some of the products that the government offers. I will invite you to look at the Lifetime ISA, for example, where the government gives you a little bonus to save for your home and really be, you know, again, on top of your budget and really understand where is your money going. And if that's your motivation and you really want to buy a place, then just go for it. But save and have a timeline in place. So it's not going to take 2 years, maybe it's going to take five. But if you really want to buy a place, I think you can do it, but it can take more time. Yeah. Now, if you feel your parents can help you, if you're quite privileged and you think they can, it's a matter of also having this type of conversation with them, because if you don't ask, maybe, you know, they won't tell you anything. They won't offer for different reasons, but if you think they can help you a little bit, you know, that also makes a big difference. A lot of people buy in the UK because their parents are helping them. So of course, I would love to see, you know, everyone buying houses, but if you can get a little plus from anywhere, I think you should take it.
Absolutely. I know you mentioned it before, the investing platforms and apps. And I've seen on your Instagram, you talked about like the automatic saving apps. What are your thoughts on this? Do you have any recommendations? I don't use any, so I would love some advice.
Yeah, no, of course. I think it's great to see that investment is becoming something that anyone can do. I mean, today you can invest with, you know, £1, £25. You can just invest your spare change. But I think taking a step back, you need to understand what is investing, first of all. And I think a lot of people are jumping into investing because of these really cool platforms, such as maybe Free Trade or Trading 212 or Moneybox. But do they understand that actually the money you invest in stocks, for example? So when we invest in the stock market, we can invest in companies. You can buy a piece of a company, so buying a stock or share. And once you're the owner or shareholder in a company, you're going to be exposed to the growth of the company. So how you make money is you buy a stock price in a company at a price, and then in 5 years' time, you sell your stock. Hopefully the company has grown, the valuation has grown, so the share price is higher and you make money. And the companies who make a lot of money, they can also pay you a dividend. So that's one form of income. So that's how you make money from buying and selling stocks. Mm-hmm. Now, I think, so this investing is basically more risky than just saving money in a saving account. And that's why you also expect a higher return on your money. Saving is safe. So for your emergency savings, you want to keep this money in cash. It's available anytime. But when you invest, you're going to take more risks. So you may not see your money again. So I think one mistake we make when we first invest money, and I've made this mistake, is investing is in just a few shares or just in a few companies. And usually you're at now a Zoom party, a dinner party with your friends. And they're like, yeah, you know, have you seen this company? Have you seen that company? You should start investing in that. You should buy shares. You don't do your research. You go, you buy these shares and you end up with like 3-4 shares. And because you know these companies, but you've never looked at their financials. You've never looked at valuation. You've just been following friends' advice who don't know a lot more than you do. Then maybe one of these companies publishes bad results. The stock price drops by 10, 20%. You freak out. You sell your investments and you lose money. So that's not a really good way to start. You're going to learn by doing it. But basically, trying to make money on a very short term in the stock market is really difficult. Some traders are doing that. Fund managers who buy who manage active funds, they're trying to do that, like find the best stocks, buy at the right time, sell at the right time. This is really hard to what we call time the market. Mm-hmm. So knowing when to buy and when to sell. So that's why I'm a lot for investing for the long term. Investing in not just a few shares, but actually investing in something that's diversified. When we invest our money, actually, we don't want to own just one share. I mean, Lehman Brothers went bust in 2008. So if you had one share in Lehman Brothers, you would have lost everything. Hmm. Now, if you had Lehman and 10 other companies, you or 9 other companies, you would have lost 10% of your money. So we want to spread our money. Usually, I mean, on a more big picture, you want to invest your money into 4 main asset classes. Cash, for obvious reasons. Equities, so shares. Bonds, you talked about bonds earlier. So bonds are debts that are offered by companies or by governments. So they tend to be less risky than shares and they pay you a more regular income. And also property. So these are like the 4 main asset classes. So ideally your money is spread over these different categories because they will behave very differently in terms of, crisis or bull market and stuff like that. So I think understanding that before you get started is important. And then when we look at this equity category, shares category, again, like spread your bets over different companies, over different funds. Funds are a really good way to get started, to get exposure to the whole market instead of getting exposed to just one company because you don't know what's going to happen at this company. So I think the more you learn, the more you can start to, pick maybe companies that you like and stuff like that. And I think on these platforms, they tend to promote more like share ownership versus fund ownership. Mm-hmm. So I think diversify because this is really, really, really important. Also, if you want to get started, you don't know anything about investments, you want to diversify, you can use apps such as Moneybox, for example. So Moneybox is an app that will help you round up your savings. So if you buy, like a coffee, we used to buy coffee in the morning. Yeah. It will round up your saving to the next pound. And this money will go either into a stocks and share ISA or into a pension. And that will be invested in a lots of different funds. So that's going to be diversified for you.
And can you choose where that goes or do they do it for you?
So they do it for you. Usually they have a few different portfolios, something that tend to be low risk, medium risk and high risk. And often they have like sustainable portfolios. So to invest in something that's more ethical, but you should really check, what's ethical for them and does it make sense? Wow. So you can choose where your money is going. I mean, with them, you can do it with as low as £1 or £25. And then you can use what we call the robo advisors. And same robo advisors, they're investing money for you on your behalf. So they will invest your money in a portfolio of funds. They're not going to pick individual stocks. And basically with that, you can just get started and learn from them. But now there's some platforms such as, Fund Supermarket, so AJ Bell, Hargreaves Lansdown, Interactive Investor. On these platforms, you just put your money every month and you go and buy your own funds, you go and buy your own shares. So you will need to know a lot more about, understanding your investment. So I think it's a journey again. And, you will make mistakes. That's okay. But I feel if you don't have a lot of time, you're maybe not really passionate about it initially, you shouldn't follow your friend's advice. Like, seriously, if someone tells you should buy this stock and that, just do your research. Spend a day, a few hours, and look into it. Just don't look at the price. Look at the behind these shares are real companies that make money. There's, you know, management teams, really good people. There's a strategy, there's products, there's services. Do you believe in the industry? So I think having your own opinion before you start investing is important. Where there's going to be growth over the next 5 years? Maybe technology. So what are the big technologies? What are we seeing? Where do you think, you know, your money should grow, and where do you want your money to be over the next 5 to 10 years? And also, when we invest, it's not a matter of, you know, buying today, selling tomorrow. I used to do that. It's fun, but it's very stressful. Yeah. It costs you a lot of money, because each time you buy an investment, you sell an investment, you actually pay. So it's not necessarily going to be worth doing it. And again, very hard to time the market. So how do you know if you're buying at a good price and selling at a good price? So leave it to the traders. And for you, just do it for the long term, 10 years, 20 years, because time is really going to be your friend. So if we have another crisis happening, okay, you've invested before the crisis, but after the crisis, you have another 10 years, another 20 years. The market generally goes up over time. So invest for the long term, and don't follow the herd. Don't follow like other people's advice. I think this is really, really important.
Yeah. And do it for yourself. Like, it's your money. Nobody else is getting to spend it.
Exactly. It's your money. And if you think it's cool to start investing, yeah, it is. It's super cool. And I love doing it. I'm passionate about it, but yeah, take your time. You know, we take your time, learn about it. There's so many places where you can learn about investing. And if you want to take a bit more risk, just do it with the money you can afford to lose. Thanks to these platforms, you can start with almost like nothing. So just do it with a few pounds here and there, get used to it, and then, you know, start investing bigger money. But think really about the long term, especially like your pension money, your stocks and share ISA. These ones, try to diversify it, invest in funds, and learn about that.
So you mentioned the ethical investing. I've never heard of ethical investing, and Rachel was telling me a little bit about it. What do you think of it? And do you think it's going to be a catalyst in, you know, creating this better world that we're all after?
Yeah, I think ethical investing is, or sustainable investing, there's different, I mean, there's can be a bit of jargon in the industry, but you know, you learn as you get started and understand. I think we've been changing our consumer habits now in terms of, you know, being more active in terms of, you know, climate change and stuff like that, social change, social impact we want to see in the world. Now you have to realize that with your money, you can actually have an even bigger impact, because your money goes into companies that will either, you know, fight climate change or actually won't care about climate change. The way we see it is that I think most companies will have to adapt over the next 5 to 10 years. So they should all have some sort of sustainable policy. And when we look at, I mean, sustainability is usually ESG. So it's ethical, it's social, and it's governance. So these are like the three pillars of, you know, sustainable investing. So you want these companies to at least not pollute the planet, treat their workers properly, and maybe, you know, have women on their board. So these are just examples. And you, with your money, the way your money was invested before, especially in pension funds, you don't realize, but there's a lot of money going into tobacco companies and stuff like that. So do you actually agree with that? So when we invest in a more sustainable way, there's two ways to do it. Either you decide, I don't want any of these in my portfolio, so I'm going to cut my investment in all the things I don't believe in, and I'm going to put all my money into something that's more green, and that's, you know, that's just going to follow my values and my perception of the world. that's one way to do it. And another way to do it is, because all these companies are actually not the best, is maybe you should hold them accountable. So still, if you're still a shareholder, so you own shares into these big companies that are still polluting and stuff like that, you as an individual shareholder, you have a vote and you can ask these companies to actually change the way they do business. Yeah. So I think it's not one or the other. I think it's quite personal. But it's really important to consider in your portfolio. And also, I think, yeah, companies will change. So when you invest, you focus on financial returns. That's very important. And that's, you know, pension. The goal of people who manage pensions or help investment decisions with pensions is to make sure people will have enough money for when they retire. So make pension pots grow over time. But now the financial aspect is important. But I personally believe that companies will adopt a more sustainable way of, you know, working and in terms of strategy and stuff. I think they will do better in the future. So these two should be aligned, but it's not that straightforward at the moment. I think, you know, sustainable investing has been there for a little while. It's changing a lot. A lot of people are now talking about it, but there's lots of, you know, learnings again in this, in this industry. There's lots of greenwashing also. So companies that are
everywhere, greenwashing, doesn't it?
It happens everywhere. Exactly. And in investment, sometimes you know, a fund is not because a fund is called, you know, the green index. You start looking into the holding of the funds and maybe it's not that green, or maybe, you know, it's because it's more like an activist fund. So they're still investing in the bad companies, but they want to change the bad companies. So again, like, you need to learn about it. But I think it's really the future. I think we can really have a big impact with our money. And changing our investments to something more sustainable can really make a difference on the planet. Now, when you start investing, you can look at companies that you think are sustainable or ethical in whatever, you know, industry. And you can also invest in funds. And when you invest with the robo-advisors, for example, they will offer you some ethical or sustainable portfolio. So you should start looking into that. Yeah. Potentially a bit of greenwashing. It's not going to be perfect. The problem is at the moment, we all have our own definition of what is ethical and what's sustainable.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I think we start somewhere. You know, this is gonna evolve very quickly. But it's really interesting to start thinking this way, especially for women. Women are even more interested in impact investing. And I believe some have been quite reluctant to invest because they didn't want to invest in big funds with, like, some of the big companies they don't believe in and they don't support. So hopefully more people will, you know, start joining this, you know, the investing crowd. One thing actually on investing, on your point earlier about, you know, these apps and all these millennial investing money, I think you have to understand that today we are sort of in a bull market. So a market where, you know, prices are going up. I mean, especially around tech stocks. And I believe a lot of millennials are looking for these, like, big tech companies. Yeah. It's definitely not investment advice. I think you should look at, you know, where you invest your money. But I want to see how this is going to work when the market starts going down. What are these young investors going to do? Are they strong enough to believe that, you know, they still believe in these companies 100%, even if the share price is 10% down, 20% down, or actually they're going to sell and lose money? So
ownership, yeah.
Exactly. So I think it's, when you invest, when you put your money, think about it as, okay, this is for the long term because I believe this company is really strong and it will, you know, drive change over the next 5 to 10 years. And this is not just like a quick win and I will need my money in, you know, in 2 years to buy my home. That's really not the point about investing.
But I think it's interesting what you say about the ethical investing, because at the same time, you don't, you know, I wouldn't feel comfortable giving my money to, like, a big oil company who are fracking and things like that. But at the same time, change has to come from within. You have to have normal people having an influence on what they're doing, and people need to use their voice because they're not, you know, as sad as it is, money speaks, doesn't it? So if people say we're not happy with this investment in your company, you have to listen to us as your investors. Very. Yeah.
And that will take time because, I mean, if you're a small investor, if you just sell your shares in one company, no one's going to care. If more people start selling their shares, obviously, but you'll still have the big institutional investors. And for them to change, it's going to take a lot of time, like the big pension providers. I mean, those who really have a lot of money. So if we start on a very small scale, like pushing our pension providers to maybe change their holdings or become more activists. And if we also do it, I think you need like 100 resolutions from individual investors, you know, to send something to the board. So yeah, understand your power at a very small scale, and also if you know these businesses also make money, they're here to stay for a little while, so they're gonna change. So yeah, maybe you still want to be invested in these businesses and ask them to change for the better.
It's very interesting. I'm gonna have a bit of a Google after this.
I was reading this book actually, if you want. Alice Ross, it's out I think today or on Thursday. It's called Investing to Save the Planet.
Okay.
It's a bit technical. It's really interesting about, you know, active investing, and she gives some examples about funds and stuff like that. So I'm gonna try to interview her on my podcast. But
amazing.
She's great.
That sounds very good. You know, when you were talking about investing a little bit of money, like if we make mistakes, it's okay because it's a small investment. Is there any financial regrets that you have, any mistakes that you made?
So I try to see everything as a learning curve, but when you make the mistake in the short term, this is really painful, to be honest. Mm-hmm. So I think the biggest financial mistake for me was not investing for my future in my 20s. So not having a pension and opting in and putting more money into my pension, because now I see the power of investing for the long term. And most women now in their 30s, 40s, 50s are trying to play catch up because they didn't put enough money. So if I had started to put maybe, you know, £20 a month, whatever, into a pension in my 20s, leave it in the stock market, no complicated investment, a few like index funds, your pension can do that for you. And take, I mean, that's personal, but take a bit more view, because when you're in your 20s and 30s, you have so much time until retirement. Mm-hmm. And usually the more risk you take, the higher the, you know, the return. So if you start building this pot, but that's almost like automatic, each month you put money away, it's in a pension, you can take it out. Then that money will grow like much faster. And if you wait until you have more money means also usually a more expensive lifestyle. So you think, you know, I'll do it later, and you actually never do it. So try to put some money away today. So enjoy your life, you know, spend money, that's completely fine. But make sure there's something that goes into your retirement, because I mean, you're going to really thank me in 20 years. I hope the investment community will thank me when I'm going to be old. And no, but this is so important. And you look at, if you don't believe me, look at like retirement calculators, look at compound interest graphs, and the way your money can grow is actually amazing.
Yeah. I've always had a pension, because that's the one thing my mum was like, you need it, because I thought, I'm going to need that £20 a month or whatever more now than I will in the future. You know, it seems so far away, but she was like, no, you're getting it. And especially when your company pay in as well, you might as well, because they're not going to pay you that money, so you're only going to benefit from it, aren't you? But I didn't realize you can also increase it.
Yeah, you can increase it. And also, if you don't have an employer, you're a freelancer, you can have a personal pension. So the beauty about, you know, workplace pension is that your employer is also contributing into your pension. So that's like a form of free money, like it's like a salary increase. But then if you don't have an employer, you're a freelancer, you still get the taxes back from the government, but you don't get of course any employer contribution. But still, I think it's a good way to save. And if you don't want to lock your money away for too long, you can look at, you know, stocks and share ISA. I mean, these two vehicles are great, because the money that grows into a stocks and share ISA, as well as the income, so the dividends, are tax-free. So that's a really good way to save. And at the moment, you can put $20,000 across your ISA. So that's quite a lot of money. And in a pension, is the same. You're going to start paying taxes when you withdraw for your pension, but the first 25% are free. So again, the investments that grow within a pension grow tax-free, because usually when you buy a share, sell a share, If you make money, the government is like, yeah, you have to pay me taxes. Yeah. Or if you earn dividends. So I think understanding the way you do things and, you know, investing within these vehicles is going to help also your investment returns.
Okay, it's amazing.
It's a lot, I know.
I could just listen to you all day. Honestly. It's fascinating. The last thing I wanted to ask you then is, what are your long-term goals for VestPod? What's coming up in the future?
Yeah, so I think VestPod in the short term, we're working on our podcast, The Wallet. So for me, it's talking to women about money. So any conversation, money experts, but also women who've just done it for themselves, the mistakes they've made, and open the conversation about money. I'm really enjoying that. It's really, really fun. And I think it's empowering. We have been doing a lot of courses. I'm going to launch like an investing course. So I'm working on that. It's not easy, but it's like a long course. And I really want women to just, you know, dig in the world of investing. We run this like small workshops all the time. So you can join one of our like 2 hours workshop on investing. I usually run this. I do a lot of work for employees and corporates also. So that's really like the short term. The long term is really going deeper into investing and see what we can do collectively for women. Can we change the way that we invest? Can we offer, you know, investment products potentially? But yeah, I have a lot of things. I think there's so much we can do to help women. So
it all sounds
we're there in 10 years.
Sign me up for that call. Okay, and then just the last question we always ask everyone when they come on. Do you have a podcast recommendation and a book recommendation?
So podcast recommendation, I really loved How I Build This by Guy Raz, NPR podcast. It's American. He interviews entrepreneurs, but it's always like a very candid conversation, and you realize it's a lot about making mistakes and the way you react to these mistakes. So I really love it, especially when you build a business. I think these ones are really motivating, because being a business owner, startup owner, you know, it's a journey. There's, you know, a lot of, I wake up every morning. I'm super happy to work on VestPod, but there's some days where it's hard. So I think having this external motivation is really great. A book. I'm going to give you two, because one financial book. So if you want to get started investing money, so in my book, You're Not Broke, You're Pre-Rich, you'll find some tips and stuff. And it's all about looking at your finances, but that's not my favorite book. I like one that's called How to Own the World. It will help you understand, you know, funds, stocks and share ISA, pensions. It's quite nice to read. It's not too technical, and it will give you a really good like understanding of the stock market. So I think that's a book I quite like in terms of finances. And then another book that I enjoyed, I love Becoming by Michelle Obama, actually. I saw her last year. She's a dream.
Oh my God. I love her podcast as well. Her podcast.
Yeah, I know. And now there's her husband's book is coming out, I think, this week. So I'm looking forward to read that.
Oh, amazing. Well, thank you so much, Emily. It's been such a pleasure having you here. I feel like I have learned so much. I feel like I should have taken notes.
I'm sure you will edit this, so you will hear it again.
Exactly.
Thank you for listening to the She Loves podcast. We hope you enjoyed this episode, and if you're enjoying these conversations with these inspiring women, be sure to share them with your friends, rate, review and subscribe wherever you are listening. If you've not already, check out our Instagram at She Loves podcast and our website shelovespodcast.com. We're also very keen to hear your stories, so if you're interested in writing for us or just want to have a chat, email us at weareshelovespodcast@gmail.com.